This is the test bit. I'm soaking in it.
Do you need me to help with your test bit?
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Nick Glover, Tim Wick, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, Molly and I are going to talk all about Doors Open Minneapolis. It's kind of like a geeky field trip type thing. You should check it out.
We're geeks without God.
Welcome to Geeks Without God without Tim. I'm your host, one of your two hosts, Nick Glover. I'm joined as always, or at least
as always.
By Molly Glover.
Hello, I'm Molly Glover.
And there's a cat. Hey, we're recording without Tim this week. He is on a vacation.
He talked about it in the boners episode,
yeah,
I think.
About being gone for a long time. And so we're doing something new and weird and different. It's the first time we've ever recorded an episode without all three of us.
It's true, and it's a little bit strange. So if we are finding ourselves a little hesitating, honestly, I've never sat across from Nick and just talked into a microphone for recording the two of us. Surprising as that may be, we've never done something just the two of us like this.
Yeah, it's a new one. So if it seems a little weird or a little odd, that's why, and not any other reasons. And we're going to be editing it too. And Tim usually does that. So if this is all technologically different as well, then
if this episode's no good, just think to yourself, I'm so glad that Tim exists.
Now I know what Tim brings to the table.
I appreciate Tim. You know, this could end up being a Tim appreciation episode by default.
Yeah, right. It's like the Superior Spider-Man story. You don't realize what Spider-Man really is until someone else is doing it without him. All right.
Let's talk about what we're going to talk about this week, though.
Yeah, we're going to talk about Doors Open Minneapolis. This is the second year they've done Doors Open since the pandemic.
Yep.
But I understand it's something that was a pre-pandemic annual event in Minneapolis.
We hadn't heard about it until post-pandemic when we moved here. And then we tried to go last year. We've actually tried to go for the last couple of years. I think they did it in 21 as well.
Did they?
I don't know. I'm not sure. But either way, we tried to go last year and it didn't work out for us.
On Mother's Day.
Yeah.
And we had full plans the other day.
So we planned for this year. We had it on the calendar. I unfortunately apparently was not signed up for the right section of newsletter that lets you know when tickets go available. Well, so we missed some things.
Let's talk about what it is. So Doors Open is a free event in the city of Minneapolis that a number of municipal, government, and private buildings or entities open up their doors to do tours, to show people around, to let them see what goes on behind the scenes.
Basically, areas that you wouldn't normally get to be in unless you were an employee. So it's, I don't know, I think that's really cool because there's entire sections of buildings that otherwise, I mean, I would never get to go into. I'm not going to go work for the city.
Right.
On the transportation stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's, it reminds me of like educational field trips as a kid.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like going to the cardboard box factory and that sort of thing. It also, like, this is something that I've an idea I've had for a long time is to have like grown-up field trip club.
Oh,
where
sure.
You get a group of adults together and you just go on like a couple times a year, go on a field trip together.
Yeah.
But so, you know, there are a lot of churches and historical buildings that will have tours or access. One of the things we did was well, let's just go in order. Let's just talk about the things we did, and then we can talk about things we didn't get to do that we want to do next year.
There's a lot of things I will just start off by saying that we chose not to do because we had a limited amount of time, and they were things that, while they sound interesting, neither one of us is super into.
Yeah.
Church architecture
is
a big one. Lots of churches, open areas of the church that you don't normally get into, and you get to see some really cool stained glass, some really neat old buildings in that way. The Basilica does a bunch of
stuff. They'll take you behind the scenes and show you how their organ works.
Yeah, if you know what I mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
But so we didn't do any of that. We didn't even like, it wasn't even on the, on no. Our radar. Our pretty much entire focus was on, weird things or, city, the way the city works. Yeah. Things. That was it, something we were both excited
city
about.
City infrastructure. So, yes. The first place we went, and I feel like this, for me at least, this was like the crown jewel of the experience. Not to blow our load right away, but we went to the Minneapolis Traffic Management Center, which I realized saying out loud, it was so exciting. We went to the Minneapolis Traffic Management Center. It sounds like, I don't know,
It was only open
stuff.
On Saturday.
Yeah.
We had to go that one day. It was perfect.
And it was a gorgeous day. So you get there, you walk in, it's just like a pretty boring government building mm-hmm. with offices up front when you get in. And then once you get inside, they had like all the different stoplights on display, like the different sizes, so you could touch them and see up close how big stoplights really are.
Some road signs that were just, they were longer than me.
Yeah.
For yep. sure.
Like ones that go above the highway and stuff, mm-hmm. I think. And then they had, all the means by which they measure traffic, whether it's the pneumatic tubes that they drive over that count how many tires have gone over them, or the newer stuff that relies on cameras doing optical recognition to count cars. They had all that stuff up close and touchable. They had like,
and it made noise, and when you touched it and it made noise, people were like, ha ha, there it goes, all yep. right. Like, they were excited yeah. that you touched it.
Yeah, we pushed the crosswalk button, and all of a sudden, it was like, walk, you know, walk sign across, whatever, Sample Avenue.
Yeah.
And a guy came over and was like, oh, now I get to go into my spiel with this. And he told us all about how there's Braille on everyone.
They have a vibration pattern that tells you different things.
Yeah, it rumbles when it's safe mm-hmm. to cross, I think. And then, a bunch of neat stuff. And then that's kind of your waiting room
mm-hmm.
before they usher you into the big command center room.
And in there were 24 televisions, like big screen monitors, basically, flat screen monitors.
The whole wall was basically...
It was a grid.
A screen.
It was a grid of 24 that could be independent or could work together, depending on what they were showing.
And it was basically divided into two things for us, at mm-hmm. least. The left-hand side had live tilt zoom camera footage mm-hmm. from intersections. And the right side had a full fucking map of the entire city of Minneapolis.
Every stoplight.
With every single stoplight in the city and the current... light status.
Yeah.
So like if the light where the stoplight was green, that meant the like more favored traffic light was green. And if it was green with a red dot, that meant the cross traffic had mm-hmm. a green light. And
they're constantly measuring it. They talked about how they're taking data at all times to figure out length of light and cars that go through on yellows and reds and all of it.
And lights that were set up to work in concert with one another these three or four lights in a row, like mm-hmm. down, you know, Hiawatha or something, are all kind of timed alike to allow traffic to pass through
yep.
more regularly. They talked about how buses and the light rails have a like constant broadcast radio signal that is picked up by stoplights so that they know that there's a bus there so that they can extend yellow lights or green lights for buses to get across to keep the people moving. Because that's mm-hmm. like, that seems to be their real priority. The real goal of this whole place is just like to get people fucking moving efficiently. The most people efficiently.
And it definitely feels like the sort of information that somebody in a movie, like the nerd in the movie would be like, well, actually I could hack into the whatever signal. Every single bus and train has this and then you would do your little spiel and then that would somehow be part of the plot. Right.
Right.
But no, it was very cool. And, we got, so when they turned on the camera, he was like, let's just see the camera at an intersection. You know what? Why don't you just go to, Cedar and Cedar and Nokomis Parkway. And we were like, ooh, and we got all excited because it's like right by our house and we go there almost every day.
Yeah.
And so we were both like, ooh. And the guy's like, did you want to come up here and take a picture with it?
He's like, you guys are excited. Is that, do you live there?
Intersection?
And we're like, yeah, that's, it's right by us.
And he's like, well, come up and take a picture of it. And I think he thought we would say no, but we did.
Yeah.
Very enthusiastically to get our picture taken. And then the guy took a picture of us getting our picture taken.
Well, you were saying afterward, like, that picture he took of someone taking our picture is going to be in the company bulletin.
Right? He's going to be like, how it went. Like,
yeah, look at these enthusiastic people who loved our talk.
Yep.
But it was so then they in the cameras, you could see, like, as cars went through intersections, blue boxes appearing around them as the cameras recognized them as a car.
Yep.
So they were talking about how in Minnesota they used to have like a magnetic coil under the pavement that would detect cars, but it didn't detect motorcycles. It didn't detect bikes. Mm-hmm. It didn't notice pedestrians. And they fucking suck with our winters and our road conditions. And so there might be a few places with those left, but basically everything that has smart cameras or smart lights is using camera recognition. And someone asked an interesting question about whether or not they were harvesting that and using that for some sort of like large traffic pattern algorithm mm-hmm. development. And they said, no, not yet. But that's something that exists, and it's something that's probably on the way.
I mean, it's an absolutely great, it's as randomized and anonymized as it can be, in the sense that, like, right. It's not like tracking license plates or things like that from what we could see.
Well,
you couldn't really see that well. It was pretty blurry.
I think you could definitely see them if you wanted to, or if you zoomed or whatever. But honestly, I don't think that people have the expectation of privacy in a public space to that same level. And I have a lot of mixed feelings about using camera for crime stuff, because like cameras aren't racist, but the people who are programming the cameras might be racist. Sure. So who knows? But this was all just traffic. None of it
so this was just the first portion of this traffic management center's experience, because then we went on to see the actual inner workings of the boxes that we'd just seen in motion on the board.
Yeah.
And then we went from there. We saw where the sign painting shop, this huge industrial warehouse shop where they paint and store and make all of the giant reflective metal signs.
They had like sheets of the reflective material that gets like heated into the sign as they make the signs and pressed.
Like a metal stamp to cut them out, and then
they had a whole like professional powder coating room for how much metal they have to powder coat for treating for outside.
And then we moved into the outside part where they had all of the trucks, and they had all the wooden stake signs that they put up when the street sweeps are happening.
Cones and barricades and all of that.
It was so cool, man. It was so cool. And if you don't think it sounds cool, that's fine. But let me tell you, if you think it sounds cool, it was 10 times cooler.
Yeah.
It was great.
No, that's accurate. And something that was maybe even nerdier somehow was, on our way out, they had a big box of 20 is plenty yard signs, which is in Minneapolis, in residential streets, the standing speed limit is 20. Most people don't drive 20 unless otherwise marked. The speed limit is 20 in Minneapolis.
Yep.
So as a part of that campaign, they've been giving out yard signs that say 20 is plenty as a way of encouraging people to mm-hmm. drive the fucking speed limit, because mm-hmm. there's kids and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And so you'll never see Molly and I be more cranky old people than when people are like racing through our neighborhood because we live near major streets. And so we were very eager to get those signs. We have a picture of Molly like hugging the signs with like a kid that won a stuffed animal at the fair.
It's true. I was so happy.
Yeah. And we definitely have one of them up, and we're like, can we just put it in a neighbor's yard? Will they care? Do we give it to them? Is that passive aggressive to be like, hey, we thought maybe you'd want this sign?
Yeah. It's, I don't know. I'm just going to stick it in the boulevard in the dead of night.
Yeah.
Nothing weird about that. Nothing weird about waiting until nighttime.
Those traffic conscious bandits. From there, we went downtown,
because
there were a bunch of things all together downtown.
Mm-hmm.
We very briefly caught the CCTV sewer demonstration.
Yeah, where they stick fiber. Was it a drone?
It was a drone. It was like a remote control car.
Like a car drone, though, not like a flying anything.
It's still a drone.
I know. It was just, but it was in actively in the sewer driving around and beneath showing our stuff. Feet yeah. And then
on
they
Nicollet
also
Avenue downtown.
Had a big section of pipe, sewer yeah. pipe out like for, that they have for demonstration. So they're like part of it is plexi so that you can see into the pipe and really see how it looks in there and everything. And it was really cool.
Yeah. They had a drone outside that they could drive through that pipe so you could see how mm-hmm. much, how it drove through the pipe. They had like examples of what your house hook up to the main mm-hmm. sewer line looks like. And we didn't stay there very long because it was kind of hard to hear and it was really hot.
There were a lot of people crowding around too, and there was yeah. only so much to see, so it just kind of felt like
I think yeah. we were kind of between demonstrations or between events for them. But a friend of the show, Joshua Humphreys, I think noted that they were particularly charismatic and he really enjoyed their
yeah there was one person who was like the main delivery person of yeah. of speeching, and he was the speeching person, or they were the speeching guy.
Yeah. From there we went to the Minneapolis Central Library, mm-hmm. which I think is the newest library in Minneapolis.
I think we saw that it was built in 2003.
No, I think it was 2004? Like 7 or something.
Okay,
but
all right.
It's I mean, you know, it's fairly new for yeah. a giant ass downtown library, which is a lot of architecture that is hotly debated, I would say.
Yeah, yeah.
Some people hate it. Some people... It was the land crawler before the stadium was the land crawler.
It was a little bit... I will say that going... I mean, I've only spent a little bit of time there back when we were doing Redshift, but like the... going back there, it was a little complicated. The person, so at every door is open location, you can check in at the desk if you wish. You only have to check in for the first time, and then from right. then on, you can just go through.
It's but your we would, quote unquote ticket.
But we were stopping by the desk just to like make sure there wasn't something we needed to know, and just to kind of see what was going on there. And at the library, the people trying to explain what we were doing was very funny, because it was like, well, there's this one thing that you can go to, but that's on the fourth floor, which you can only access by going this way and taking these elevators. But if you want to go to the third floor exhibit, like, it's these stairs. And it was just, and I remember being like, oh, that's complicated architecture to yeah. have to roll into your spiel. Well,
the building is bifurcated, and only some of the floors have bridges connecting the two halves. Mm-hmm. It's like hemispheres of a brain.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But yeah, we went to the special collections, which is normally not open on the weekends, but you can kind of go anytime during the week, I guess.
I think
probably.
It's, yeah, Monday through Friday, or Monday through Thursday, I believe yeah. is when it said it's open.
And so special collections are things that the library has that you can read when you're there, or that have like historical importance, I think.
And what they showed us was like a selection of everything they have available. So you didn't get to see, like, we didn't see the entire restaurant menu collection, but that is a collection you can look through. They have every single Minneapolis restaurant's menu dating back to like, I want to say it was the early like the 20th century.
It looked like the 20s to me.
It is the 20s now.
No,
like
I mean,
I know what you
mean. 1920s.
Yeah, right?
Sorry.
It's weird to think about, right? You can't just say the 20s.
The roaring 20s.
I know.
Yeah. that's awesome. Like, I would love to kind of
browse through that. I would love to browse through that. Just the prices, what they called food, what was available. Yeah. Like, there's a lot of food that we just kind of take for granted as being available to us that didn't start to become available until the 50s.
Right.
And so, like, those earlier restaurant menus aren't going to even include things like avocados.
Yeah, the entrance to the special collections is this beautiful wooden archway that I think was salvaged from the one of the previous downtown libraries. Another thing that they had up that they had salvaged from the last central library was the statue of Minerva.
It's so cool.
It's a bronze.
I believe it's bronze. It's really beautiful.
Yeah. Bronze statue that they took from the old building. It's in the lobby when you first walk in. It's really gorgeous. It used to be an outdoor statue, and they have pictures of how she was attached to the old building up in the special collections.
And it used to be that she was a target for lots and lots of bird poop, just constantly pooped on. And that's one of the things that they did when they fixed her up.
Yeah. They had a lot of historical maps of Minneapolis. They had a map on display that was like the slum, you know, how the program to deal with the slums of Minneapolis, showing like the neighborhood, the Rondo neighborhood destruction, the neighborhoods that they destroyed for making a highway in Minneapolis, which is really, you know, tragic and neat to have on display and to show, like,
It's important.
Look how official this was.
It's important to display,
yeah.
I think. And I'm glad that they choose it for the selection, because it would be very easy to just pretend it wasn't there, or
yeah.
or just be like, oh, sure, it's there. I mean, we're not going to pretend it's not there, but it's not the foot forward they put to show you the things you can see in that particular collection.
It's right.
It's very good.
After the library, we went to the Dayton's building.
Yeah, it was the old J.B. Hudson jewelry store is what they had open that you went into. And it was pretty much untouched since the late 70s.
I
don't remember specifically now.
The architectural style of the displays makes me think 60s. Like, it looks like very Mad Men era.
Yeah. It was really... A lot of the display cases are all still intact, and like all the built-ins are still there, so you get to see all that. And there's all the rooms that lead to the tiny window boxes, the big old, like the window boxes that faced out.
The display windows
yeah. for mannequins and things. So those are all boarded up. There's no window glass or anything, but you can be in the space.
They're like frosted from the inside, mm-hmm. but you can still see the natural light coming in. Mm-hmm. There's like a long, narrow hallway that's hidden behind all the display cases that gets you into those display windows.
Yep. And so it's very narrow and small room, and you can just imagine filling it with mannequins and fake snow and big trees.
Yeah.
And I love window dressing things like that. I think it's very cool. I think it'd be a lot of fun to make.
It's just adult dioramas.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Then we got to go in their jewelry vault, which was the most boring part of the whole thing.
Yeah.
It's like, yep, it's a plaster room with a big metal door. It's
definitely a vault.
Definitely.
That's where you could lock stuff behind that door.
I think it was deactivated too.
Yeah.
And then we went, they had the roof lounge, the old money Dayton's lounge.
Yes. On the roof. Yep.
Open. Yep. And so you could, you know, it was right next to the IDS building. You could, mm-hmm. you could see that the crystal court right from right there.
And then from there we went down. Was it from there that we went to the transit center?
Well, from there we took a break.
We went
to the Wienery and we loaded up on dope hot dogs.
That's right. We went to the Wienery was really great. I hadn't been there.
I don't think
I'd been there before. It's on the West Bank. We ordered from the window on the side and just sat on the
outside.
Little picnic tables outside waiting, and it was really great.
It was like three hot dogs and a huge amount of fries, two potatoes worth of fries for the two of us was under $20.
Yep.
It was fucking delicious.
It was great.
Yeah. Love the Wienery. Shout out. From there we went to the Library Access Center.
That's right.
Which was kind of a bust.
That was kind of a bust. It was just sort of like, yep.
It was so.
We walked in and there was a tour they were going to be doing.
So it seemed like the video that they had showing actually made me more interested, but not for the amount of time we had and for when we were.
It was like started. A 40-minute wait to go on a 30-minute tour.
I think it was 20 and 20.
Was
but
it?
But you're.
It was
not
a very,
exaggerating.
It was a very, very and it was indoors with a whole bunch of people just sitting in a waiting room, and it didn't feel like. It just didn't feel like a good use of our time.
It looks like a vault, like a fucking like an underground bunker for information.
I'm sure
that the U of M runs.
I'm sure it's very cool. But I would say that if I was going to go again, I'd want to maybe prioritize that on day two,
right?
And be there right away.
Well, it looked like
they mix you in with a whole bunch of strangers.
It looked like people had reservations or had gotten tickets for it.
Maybe.
So maybe that was one of the ticketed events, and maybe you could get your ticket for the first thing in the morning and show up right away and just do it.
If there were ticketed people, they sure were waiting just as much as non-ticketed people, it seemed like.
And then we went to the Metro Transit Blue Line Operations and Maintenance, which is the light rail.
To get into, you have to, they don't, okay, so there were like six do not enter, you could die, dangerous, do not come in here signs that we had to ignore and then drive over train tracks and shit.
There's like one friendly little doors open sign like taped to the do not enter sign. Only one of them, like the first one.
And then
everything after that is still saying don't come here.
And it's like, are we supposed to? And I'm like, I'm just going to drive toward the trains. Like there's trains up there.
It's like drive over these 15 train tracks in a row. Don't worry. You hear trains all around you. None of them are moving, probably.
Yeah, they were blowing the horns for part of the demonstration. Right. So you could definitely hear train alarm noise coming at you.
So when you first walk in, there's a desk and some people welcoming you like at most of the doors open places. They gave us a little paper kit, like a one sheet like paper kit.
Like a paper doll, but like it makes a train.
Tabe, slot yeah. A. It makes yep. a light rail. We yep. have it up in the house. Molly put it together.
It took me no time at all. It was very clever.
Very, very, it's a good one. Mm-hmm. And you kind of go from there, like through there, you can kind of see like the locker rooms of the, you know, maintenance people and the and yeah. the drivers
I think it's drivers
engineers
maybe trains? Engineers might Shit. Be engineers
so you can see like all the uniforms hanging up
yeah and the bathroom was just the locker room like you yeah. went to if you needed to use the bathroom there were just coats and stuff hanging yep. up and there were like cans of deodorant and
don't touch little, Bob's boots
yeah man it was very yeah. cool
and they you go from there right into like a huge open warehousey area mm-hmm. that had room for all the trains to pull up and get worked on and cleaned and there were
I think there were four places for them to actually be in like the mechanic area part
I think
and
it
then
was,
there were more it looked like there was like storage to move in
I,
and out
I think it was more like 16
really?
Because I think those ones on the other side and in the middle
oh.
were ones that they could because they had the little turntable.
They were just empty. Oh, you're right.
They had a turntable in the middle that was hand operated, so they could pull a train up mm-hmm. onto the turntable and turn it around to route it through different parts of the building.
It was really neat, and so you got to see they had big boxes of the tools they used to yeah. work on them out and
spare parts all over the fucking mm-hmm, place. Like mm-hmm. they had like boxes labeled, you know. Plastic chair replacements and chair covers mm-hmm, and mm-hmm. handrail loops and all that, like a whole wall of those, you know, what size screw, what size nut bins that mm-hmm. were that got outrageously large. I think Molly pointed out.
Yeah, they got to be like it looked like they were the bolts were like my wrist size almost. Yeah. Like they were very big.
They had one of the trains pulled up so that you could get in on one side of the train and walk through it, waiting in line to get to the engineer's seat
mm-hmm.
which is totally like a one-person fighter jet cockpit.
Unfortunately, it's really a one-person line to get to it
yeah.
but also then people had to exit back through the line. It was a very weird,
it's a little awkward
and awkward place and I okay so hold on so no one told me that this was like all the way working. I just have figured that maybe like,
it was a completely turned on train.
I thought that it was, I didn't realize turned on meant they would also allow the emergency alarm to be on. So I saw the emergency alert button and I thought, huh, I wonder if that's an actual like push button or if it's, and when my finger grazed it, the electric charge of my finger touching, just brushing against
the
button.
It wasn't a physical button.
It was a capacitive button. So yeah. me just like touching it made it go off. And there was no turning it back off.
So
it just turned on and it was.
What we were told by a friend who used to drive the trains was that it's basically just a call button to the engineer.
That's what it said. It was calling the engineer. And I think so the engineer could have turned it off maybe.
So who is the engineer? The engineer at that time was a 7-year-old kid who was sitting in the chair and like turning the wheel and pushing the buttons and going toot toot and pushing the button to make it honk. Like that's who you were calling for help was Tyler.
I know.
And Tyler needed an app.
Three more people didn't turn it off though.
No,
like people just kept ignoring it.
I don't know if it just rang for 2 minutes or if someone eventually realized what was happening and pushed the flashing button.
The family behind us, I was so embarrassed because the guy was like, well, look what you did, basically, like in a friendly way. But
it was a fun way to find out the people behind us in line had a really good sense of humor.
It's true. And then that was the last thing we did.
Was it?
I'm pretty sure because...
We went to the Big Animals.
Oh, right. The Big Animal Studio.
So the last place we went was an art studio, like... puppeteers?
A collective of physical artists,
it's called the Big Animal Production Studio. They have made floats and mm-hmm. like animatronics and
giant puppets,
kinetic sculptures
for festivals.
Yep.
There are multiple artists who have studios within it
yeah.
and they all have very different like things that they're making, but they are all physical media artists.
Right.
Like they're using, it's not like
there's a welding shop.
They're building 3D objects.
Yeah.
Almost everybody.
I swear that I've been up to a party there and it was called the Bat Cave.
I thought so too,
but
it
seemed like like punks maybe.
It was very deja vu. Yeah. There was like a party space in the back for sure. Like but I will say, so we were in one guy's studio and he, pointed to a table where there was just like a big rotary kind of gear shaft looking thing. And he was like, that's a tornado. We were like, what? And he's like, that's a tornado right there. That's a tornado. When it's done, it's going to be, I mean, it'll be a tornado
machine.
You'll
see it in the...
It's going to be at the state fair, he said.
The weather booth.
One of the weather or ag or something. Yeah. One of the areas that talks about weather is going to have a big display, and it will be making a tornado with like stuff that's going to be attached to it and everything.
And
it
sounds really cool. And he said that they had one before that they made, but they had to make a bigger one because the old one wasn't representative of the changes we've seen in our climate and weather. Mm-hmm. So it's, how neat is it that they have to make a bigger tornado display? And how terrible is it that to know that why they need to make a bigger tornado display is because the things are getting worse.
Yeah.
The one guy had a hiking backpack frame that had a Gamera costume built around it that I recognized right away and asked him about it. And he said it was a project he and his son did for like a costume for him for a G-Con, like a Godzilla convention. Mm-hmm. There was one person had a whole bunch of art that was like organic things cobbled together, like a gourd carved into the front of a face with a nose, but it all looked very skeletal and dead. There were like crazy witch masks. That was one that had the Baba Yaga
like it, puppet that it, looked like it was made it, out of some dead foresty things.
It looked like a mask at first, and then when they held it upright, it was like, oh no, Baba Yaga.
It was very neat. It was really cool to see. It felt like being among weirdos, even if they're, you know, my fellow weirdos making things in a way I don't create.
Right.
But it's nice to be around weird people because I feel more at home for sure.
It was
really cool. All in all, honestly, I would say so it's always in May from what I can tell.
Yep.
My guess is it would be, if I had to guess.
So it's around Mother's Day.
They might have already announced what the dates are going to be in May of 2025. But if I had to take a guess, my guess would be the weekend of the 17th and 18th.
Yeah.
That'd be my guess because that's when it was this year.
So and why are we mentioning when it is? Because you might want to plan ahead and try to get notified of the alerts and stuff, because there were things that we didn't get to do that are ticketed that we are very interested in. And I think first and foremost, for me at least, I think is the touring the hydroelectric dam.
Yes.
I want to do that so fucking bad.
Yeah. We're going to make sure that happens next year, as well as going to the Orfield Labs.
Yes.
Because from what I have now heard from our friend, Zoe said that it is you are in the room for 30 minutes.
Oh my God.
And like that is.
Explain what it is.
So it is the quietest room in the world. It is a completely. I mean, it's like a soundproof,
sonically isolated.
Yeah, it's a sound absorbing room. So it's not even just about, you know, it is not just that you can't hear from the outside. It's that you honestly can't hear things within it as well. It's supposed to be very unnerving, and a lot of people don't like it, and it makes them very uncomfortable. I think it sounds fucking awesome, and I'm very excited about it.
Because you like if you are not talking or making noise. Right away, it's like you can hear every heartbeat. You can hear every rustle of clothing, every swallow, every blink.
Yeah.
It becomes...
Of your own body. But like nothing else, really.
But nobody else's, because it is like anti-acoustically designed.
I'm very excited to see it. Yeah. So that's a ticketed thing. But so these are the main reasons to, I would say, and you can go to, if you just search Doors Open Minneapolis, you'll find their main site, and you can sign up for their newsletter, which I believe also should include ticket. Just make sure that whatever it's sending you, just pay attention to when it is, because it looks like tickets went on sale not too long before the beginning of it.
For free. They went up for reservation.
When I say for sale, I mean for reservation. Yeah. Yes, for reservation. It is all free. But you know, you want to have the whole day available, I would say, for sure. We put the puppy in daycare because it was just easier. We just didn't want to have to worry about him. But we were gone, you know, 8 hours for sure.
Pretty much.
And we were really able to be smart about our plan and just park downtown on the street and then walk around a good bit.
Yeah.
So I would say that it does require a lot of mobility. If you are, a lot of the places were accessible to people needing to use chairs and walkers. We saw people in wheelchairs, people using walkers all throughout the traffic management center for sure.
And I think Anything that's like, oh, an older building, like some of the parts of the jewelry store in Dayton's wouldn't have been accessible.
No, not at all.
Even like I was squeezing through some places. It was a little close. But I would say, a lot of the stuff we saw was also incredibly accessible by public transit.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some of it was literally public transit.
Yeah, it was really great. But yeah, 10 out of 10 experience as far as I'm concerned. We didn't even get to do the things we wanted to do the most. Right.
Yeah, your city might do a Doors Open. You should look into it and see if that's something that they do too. It's kind of awesome. I think when Tim comes back, we would encourage him greatly to go check it out, because I know he likes church architecture, and I know he likes that style of art and the themes and styles. And so there's a lot of that.
There's a lot of other architecture too. Like I know there's like it's either the Fauchet or the IDS.
Yeah.
Different buildings allow you to go all the way up, or different areas of those.
Observation decks open.
Yep. Some of those are ticketed, mm-hmm. reserved events. Otherwise, like I know there's, cause I was watching the company Rethos's posts about it, and they were Fauchet is closed. Too many people in line. Like as of now, we're closing down the line. We've only, so there are a lot of these, you might be signing yourself up for a really long wait. So you might want to think about other things you like to do so that you can, pivot as necessary. Yeah.
They're like Disney World. Right. Totally. There are a lot of places that are like options rich. Like downtown is options rich. West Bank is options rich.
Yep.
There's a spot or two in Northeast that were pretty rich. There is one or two spots in South Minneapolis that had a number of things available that were not things that we were interested in, but they were there.
And they're working. I know they're working all the time to get more companies, more places, more things added. I know Lakeside Cemetery had something.
Oh, neat.
Or Lakewood. I don't remember the name. But there was a cemetery our friend works at that had like an open, that they opened up a lot of
open
their...
Open casket?
No, they open up, I think they're building them itself.
Hey kids, grab a shovel.
No.
All right. That's our field trip report.
Yeah.
From Doors Open Minneapolis. If you are one of our patrons, you're actually not hearing this early because normally we get a chance to record earlier with Tim and we're not editing them at kind of the last minute. But thank you for your support all the same.
Always.
We had to recently go through and fight to get our hosting bill lowered to something that is acceptable for our patron support. So thank you for that. It's like on our minds right now because
the
bills we're paying. And if you're not a patron, normally you get to listen to episodes way early. So consider throwing us like $1 a month or something. Not a big deal. Otherwise, we'll be back next week with more geeky, godless, atheist fun.
See you then. Bye.
Bye. Next year, I'm going to shit in the mayor's sink.
He's not going to do Doors Open.
Doors Open. Oh, no.
We're geeks without God. Recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging and listen to past podcasts at geekswithoutgod.com. And you can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.